The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
It might be. It could be. Yeah, that's the worst loss in of the season, and there's been a lot of them. I'm Steve Zinsmeister. That's Derek Montilla. Cody Fincher as well.
There's been a lot of worst losses.
There's been a lot of bad losses this season.
Everyone seems like the worst, but then there's a new worst.
This one might take the cake.
It absolutely takes the cake, Steve. If I was Torey Lovullo, not only would I quit managing this team, I would quit baseball altogether. I would go do, like, I don't know, car insurance sales or something. Just something that would bring you more peace in life than managing this team.
Let's set the scene. Yesterday, the first place Giants were in town at Chase Field. Merrill Kelly on the mound against Alex Wood.
D-backs looking to split the series, by the way.
Yeah. Alex Wood, by the way, lost all control at some point during that game. I have no idea.
Alex Wood, and speaking as someone who has Alex Wood on a fantasy team, he was so good to start the year, and he's been just not very good lately. It's, and that's not good for the Giants because he's probably their second best pitcher behind Kevin Gausman.
Whereas you could probably say the opposite for Merrill Kelly. He had a rough start to the season and has been fantastic since the start of June.
Yeah.
Merrill Kelly on the mound. It was a very Merrill Kelly game. He went, what was it, eight innings?
Eight shutout innings, three hits.
No runs.
Also, practically no strikeouts.
Like four strikeouts, he doesn't strike people out anymore.
He just gets people out.
He throws a lot. You could say he's a ground ball pitcher, but he's not. He gets people to hit a lot of fly balls and stuff.
You get to the end of the game and you realize you have no clue how those players
got out. The ball's fine gloves.
Even when he gives up a lot of hits, it's typically in one kind of spurt, and then he kind of can get past it. I remember his last start wasn't that great, but what was impressive was his ability to rebound from it and still go out there and throw four scoreless innings after giving up like a bunch of singles in one inning.
So he gets them to the ninth inning. They're up 4-0 on the Giants. The Giants have their two best relievers warming up in the bullpen, so they clearly still think they're in the game. And the Diamondbacks rolled out Taylor Clark, who was coming off of the IL, hasn't pitched in a while. And Taylor Clark immediately loads the bases. There's no outs. You're up four still. Even with bases loaded, no outs, I still felt like, okay, you should be able to win this game still.
Did you?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Well, I was sitting next to somebody who told me in the sixth inning when they were up 4-0, I said, hey, look, we're up 4-0 on the first place team. And he goes, yeah, but the Giants know that once they get into our bullpen, they win.
Correct.
Literally said that to me in the sixth inning.
And to Gabe Kapler, the Giants manager's credit, that dude pulled out all the stops in that ninth inning. It started with a single, a double, and a single. Or a double, single, double. One of those
something like
combinations.
That, yeah.
And then they load the bases. He put in two pinch runners, and then he pinch hits Buster Posey.
Yeah.
Chris Bryant was, oh no, he started that game. But like, Brandon Belt comes in. Lamont Wade Jr. didn't start that game. He's been really good this year. He comes in and pinch hits. Buster Posey pinch hits. He pulled out all the stops because, you know, the D-backs bullpen is their weak point. And he totally took advantage of that. I had an issue, and I know that Torey Lovullo doesn't have a lot to work with in the bullpen for the D-backs. But a 4-run lead, 4-0, is still, in my book, quote, high leverage. It's not that big of a lead. It's not that they were up 6-0 or 7-0. And you bring in Taylor Clark, who hasn't pitched in the major leagues in over a month, coming off an injury against the first place Giants. That's kind of not fair to Taylor Clark to me either. But I really was like, what? Okay, Taylor Clark's coming in right now. Okay, I guess that's fine. But if Tyler Clippard was ready, because he came in later in that inning, if he was ready to go that day, why wasn't Clippard the first guy out of the bullpen? When you keep saying that you're trying to win baseball games, you're trying to compete. What's Taylor Clark coming out there for?
Or let Merrill Kelly keep going.
I didn't have a problem with Merrill Kelly.
Merrill Kelly needed to come out of that game. He was already over 100 pitches, and I get it. But Lovullo has been very careful with these guys up to this point. He addressed it on the day
before. I'm surprised Merrill Kelly came out for the eighth,
to be honest with you. He let Zach Gallen go to 108 pitches on the game before. It was the first time since 2019 that two pitchers had gone over 100 pitches in consecutive games for the D-backs, right? So, and I mean, we're talking about...
It's not usually how they operate.
Right. So, and it's not how Lovullo operates.
Yeah.
I feel like for Lavolo, on one hand, deep down inside, that he was just trying to lose this game because they're trying to lose all the games. But
I don't think that's right.
Okay, so maybe that's not right. But what I also think is that Lavolo is trying to give guys an opportunity to come out and perform, but he is trying to put them in high leverage situations. He's trying to use this season to give guys certain experience because it's a lost cause at this point. It doesn't mean that he expected Taylor Clark to go out there and do what he did. He didn't expect Clark to completely lose it like that. And I think the reason why he stuck with him was trying to let him get out of it, right? Because
and the three batter rule.
Well, that too. Right. That three batter rule has been tricky for Torrey this season.
Yeah.
But like,
that was not a good look.
I think the fact that Tyler Clippard has been so good since coming back, especially in those, because he's their closer now, I guess you could say that.
Pretty much. He's their only reliable, I say
experience.
Reliable. Experience yeah. is a better word. Yeah.
Noe Ramirez reliever. Has been very reliable. He's just still on
the COVID list.
Yeah. Him and Stuart.
Stuart Fairchild.
Yeah. Fairchild both got actually. Came down with symptoms. Of
Ramirez, COVID. Though, hasn't been around a long time in this organization.
Right, but he has
you
been.
You know what I mean?
You could tell because Torrey has talked about if, you know, he goes, if you've been paying attention, you know who I'm probably going to go to, you know, now that Soria is gone. And that's because Noe has been coming in the eighth inning a lot. And honestly, has been doing probably the most consistent job as a reliever for this team. Joe Mantiply, too. He's another guy that Lavolo's leaned on a bit and has been kind of reliable, but outside of that, it feels like the entire bullpen, no matter who it is, isn't consistent, isn't reliable. Taylor Clark is, I didn't have a problem with Taylor Clark coming into the game. I, listening to what Bear said, I think that's a valid point. If you were trying to win this game, that probably wasn't the move to make, if that's truly what you were trying to do. When I try to think about it, what Lavolo was trying to do there, it falls back on the amount of opportunities he's talked about giving people and trying to see how they basically if they shine in those situations.
And the other side of that coin that I was flipping earlier is a major league pitcher should be able to get three outs with
correct.
A four run lead.
Correct.
You can give up three runs, but you should be able to get three outs and win the game.
The other night, Jake Faria came into the game, and yes, the Diamondbacks were down. He had left. It was one of those situations where Zach Gallen was really good in the game, and he probably should have pulled him out, but he didn't. He left him in, and Gallen wasn't able to get out of the inning. He gave up a couple of runs, gave up the lead. It was tied up to that point. But Jake Faria came in the following inning and got three outs. But Lamont Wade Jr. beat a wild pitch on the third strike to first base, and the inning just turned into a nightmare from that point. I mean,
it was all two outs, I think.
Three outs. It was three. Yeah. Well, no. I mean, it was the third out. It was the final out of the inning. Should have been, but it wasn't. So instead.
So they really had three outs, but not really.
Right, yeah. But not really. And instead, he gives up a walk, a double, an RBI double, and then a three-run home run to just completely put the game out of the lead. I was amazed at how bad that went for Faria and how quickly it went that bad, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like you said, a major league reliever should be able to get three outs, and he did. But you would think that, okay, you got, you know, that one didn't. Then he couldn't find the plate after that. After Lamont Wade Jr. reached, he couldn't find the plate at all. I thought that was one of the worst losses just because in my mind, I kept putting out the fact that Gallen had already given up two runs that gave up the lead, right? It was just another case for me of how no matter who you pull out of this bullpen, even in a situation where they actually did get the three outs, they still can't, you know, have the shutdown innings that the Diamondbacks need their bullpen to come in and have. I've never seen this bullpen be this unreliable.
Well, it's part of the reason why I thought going into the ninth, they should have just given Merrill Kelly the ninth. Now, I understand that we were all a little surprised he came out for the eighth, but 104 pitches isn't the end of the world. And I know that 100 pitches is kind of like that mark where once you get to it, it's like athletes being 30 years old.
102.
That's like the hump, right? If you're over 30, you're old.
Right.
If you throw over 100,
it's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
But what's 104 versus 115?
Well, they asked
if he
Gallen,
gets you done, if he gets you through the ninth inning.
They asked Gallen after the game if he was gassed after the 109 pitches that he threw, and he said no. Like, he could have thrown
more.
Well,
but more. Also, even if he is, that's your job,
yeah.
is to get gassed,
yeah.
to leave everything out on the field. Do you think Merrill Kelly didn't want to pitch the ninth inning?
There was audible gasps in the press box about Gallen getting left in there. I mean, you're talking about a guy that has had a super short leash and has had major injuries on his arm.
He's injury prone this year.
And
yeah.
he's had, literally in every start this year, a pitch count.
He's had limits
on his pitch count.
It's the conditioning of us as press. The minute we see over 100 pitches, we're like, wait, what's going on? Why is
different.
He leaving him in there?
That's different. Merrill Kelly is not a hard thrower. He doesn't have particularly amazing stuff. We talked about it earlier. He just gets out.
Technically,
and people are saying this too, that he is coming off of that injury and that surgery last year where a thoracic outlet surgery or whatever it's called, where they literally had to remove one of his ribs to fix what was wrong with him. So I guess.
But he's been so good the last two months.
I know.
But
Torrey Lovello leaving Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly in after 90 pitches is a shock the way he's been running the team this year. I was shocked that Merrill Kelly came out for the eighth inning.
Yeah.
You know, to be honest with you, I was like, oh, Merrill Kelly's still in that. Okay, cool. But
there just didn't appear to be a you take a starting pitcher out of the game.
It was literally,
when
he's at 100 pitches.
You give up a hit or you start walking guys, or if there's a 9-pitch at bat where you just can't get that guy out, then you say, all right, we got to pull the hook. There wasn't that moment last night.
I'll give you a stat. It's the first time this season he's gone over 100 pitches. And even in his really good games, he's only had 10 games where he's gone to 90 pitches this season.
Well, in his last start against the Dodgers, Torrey Lovello removed him from the game with 88 pitches, mm-hmm. and then Stephon Crichton comes in and gives up a 2-run homer to Justin Turner, and took the lead.
He also works quicker than most pitchers do. So he doesn't reach 100, not because they choose not to leave him in the game, but it's also because of how quickly he works.
Yeah, he had 82 pitches in an 8-inning appearance. And that was the longest in a game he's gone besides.
Was that the Cubs game a couple weeks ago?
That was the Cubs game a couple weeks ago.
It's funny. I've been to 2 Diamondbacks games this season, like in person. One was yesterday, and the other one was that Cubs game. Both Merrill Kelly games, and they're almost identical in a lot of ways. He goes 8 innings. You get into the ninth. I'm pretty sure they left him in the ninth in that game.
Yeah, and then he gave up a couple of
runs. Gave up a hit or something.
Yeah, hit, not runs.
And then they pulled him.
Yeah.
That's what you should have done last night.
Sure. See if he can get a couple of outs.
Roll him out there.
Yeah.
Who was going to be your better option? Taylor Clark, who's completely cold, like Cody said. He hasn't pitched in months. He's totally cold. Or Merrill Kelly, who's been rolling for 8 innings.
To be honest, Kelly typically gets stronger as the game goes on, too. You don't really see him struggle as it goes on later. He starts.
He usually has slow starts where he gives up a couple runs in the first inning.
Or
and
hits.
Then he rebounds. Early on. He makes adjustments and he figures it out.
But when he doesn't give up those runs or those hits, leave him out there. If he's doing a good job, don't interrupt him. Don't stop him. I would have liked to have seen them put him out there in the ninth inning, see what he can do. If he gives up a hit or he walks a guy, then you yank him.
Yeah.
That's what you have relievers for.
Yeah.
I just would have rather seen Merrill Kelly than Taylor Clark.
Can we just talk about how good he's been real quick, Merrill Kelly? In his last month, in 33 2/3 innings, he's got a 2.67 ERA with an 0.95 whip.
I'm still surprised no contender wanted him.
I'm shocked too. I'm very shocked at that. There is a few guys that I was surprised that didn't get traded. Merrill Kelly was one of them for the D-backs, not just for the D-backs, but I was surprised he didn't get traded. I was surprised John Gray didn't get traded. Did you guys see Trevor Story pull himself out of the game after he didn't get traded?
No.
Apparently, I was told this by a friend because I didn't see it either. Trevor Story basically benched himself after he wasn't traded in the next game because he's like, why am I here? Why am I still a Rocky? I'm not going to be here next year.
Was that like an attempt to get traded?
No, it was
after the deadline?
I think it was after the deadline, but I'm not sure. Anyway, but I'm surprised he wasn't traded. I'm surprised John Gray wasn't traded. I'm surprised Merrill Kelly wasn't traded. Merrill Kelly's been really good.
I think the numbers that they look at for Merrill Kelly, especially late in the game, is his, you know, breakdown by inning per the season, right? So when you look at his numbers, he has an 8.64 ERA in innings 7 through 9. And then
that's where the numbers, like the analytics, and that's fine. That's,
it's too much, though. Yeah, it's too deceiving, like, of the actual player
what's
right
going
now.
On yeah. in the game. It's like, well, he's done this, but what's he doing right now? Right now, he's shutting out the first place San Francisco Giants at home with a chance to split the series. And you guys, and they claim that they still want to win baseball games. That's not winning a baseball game.
He's made it past the seventh inning and or into the seventh inning and beyond in 9 games. That's it.
Wow.
So we're not talking about a lot of games. He's had 1 game that he's pitched in the 9th inning, 2 games that he's pitched in the 8th. Hmm. Not a lot of data to go there on his late, you know, innings performance. I just think that I feel bad for Lavolo because this season, it feels like no matter what he does, it's going to go badly. If he leaves the starter in, like he's going to give up 3 runs. If he leaves, you know, and everybody's going to question why he left him in over 100 pitches. He brings in a reliever. Why'd you take out the starter? He was doing so good.
And it's so difficult for Torrey, too, because he has that he has a philosophy of what he thinks is right. And if the philosophy says, I got to bring in the bullpen here, and then he looks down at his bullpen and sees the assortment of pitchers he has, he goes,
maybe I'll just leave him in.
It's the suicide squad, basically. He's looking at the suicide squad.
He almost has a no-win situation, because if he leaves the guy in too long, he's going to be like, there'll be people like, why didn't Torrey take him out? And then if he takes the guy out and the bullpen comes in and blows up, why didn't he leave him in? It's so difficult.
I know. I don't know if you guys saw this while watching the game yesterday. I was actually there. I was in, like, I don't know, what is it, section L or whatever. I was like right behind home plate pretty much, which is pretty cool. I don't get that very often.
This was a work meeting, you said?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Work meeting.
Interesting.
With beer and hot dogs. And
what?
I was able to notice visually.
Where's my work meeting?
That there was a lot of frustration from the Diamondbacks players. Now, it's probably been building all season long. We can all acknowledge that. But there was an instant. So you saw Dalton Varsho bunted for a base hit at one point.
Derek.
Which was interesting. No shift, by the way. Yeah. But
he also struck out 3 times.
Yeah, he did. He does that a lot.
But
he bunts for a hit, and up next to the plate is Merrill Kelly. Everyone in the stadium knows that Merrill Kelly is bunting.
Uh-huh.
That's what's coming.
Sure.
He goes to lay one down. Doesn't work. Goes to lay one down. Doesn't work. Goes to lay one down. Doesn't work. You're out. And Merrill Kelly was furious. I could just tell. And I was furious because I know that even though you're a pitcher and you're hitting like 071 or whatever it is, I was like, you got to get one of those down.
Yeah.
You can't foul off 3 bunts in a row. And he was visually frustrated.
You just got to pull
this
back.
This is why we need the DH.
Yeah, I agree.
That's why we need the universal DH.
I agree. And so we can get Seth Beer.
That too. But like, just staying on that, there was, I don't even remember who it was, but there was a pitcher, and it was I think it was Interleague. So it was an American League pitcher who had to bat in National League Park. And he steps in there, and he just has the bat on his shoulders, barely steps in the box, like Henry Rowan Gardner.
That reference.
And
that was a good reference.
That's a good reference.
Okay, he's in the box, and then he just, throws 3 pitches right down the middle, the inning ends, it was 2 outs, sits down. I'm like, really?
Easy out.
You want?
Easy out, guys, easy out.
Pitcher's got a big butt.
Speaking of that, I saw Michael Pineda hitting the other day.
Oh, my gosh.
No,
he put the ball in play.
I had no clue who it was. I was like, that is the biggest human being I've ever seen in the batter's box.
Huge, dude.
I was like, did the Twins get another huge dude?
Is that Miguel Sano? No, it's Michael
Pineda. Is he even on the Twins? I don't even remember.
Good Lord.
But, yeah, it's just just seeing pitchers hit now, it's like they really don't care, except for Madison Bumgarner.
Most of them don't.
Zach Greinke cares.
Okay, well, he doesn't get to hit
and
anymore.
He cares about stealing bases, too.
DeGrom's Johnny Cueto stole a base last week.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
DeGrom is a good hitter, I guess. Madison Bumgarner, I think, still thinks he's a good hitter, but he hasn't really hit anything.
He also thinks he's still a good pitcher.
Oh,
Was that too much?
See, the other thing, though, too, is most
he's
of these
been
pitchers...
been good lately, Derek.
He has been.
Most of these pitchers were the best athlete in their hometown,
yeah.
So they played shortstop as well. Yeah. So a lot of them, you know, like they have the capability, the athleticism to hit.
Not Merrill Kelly.
But they haven't practiced.
Yeah, Kelly doesn't care.
12 years?
No, he just does not care.
Merrill Kelly
doesn't
care.
He doesn't want it. He doesn't want to do it. He does. He got his one hit this season, and he was good. Like, you should have seen how satisfied he was with himself.
By the way, Derek, in the last month, in 25 innings, Madison Bumgarner has a 1.80 ERA with a with a 0.88 whip and three quality starts.
I'll bet the Giants regret not trading for him. Remember I threw that out there?
Yeah, I was all for that.
And it would have figured that's how he would start pitching once we traded him away, too.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. Yeah. That obviously
that,
would have
That would have hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I would have been pretty upset.
Yeah, if he can keep that up, the one thing I haven't had a chance to really bring up to Lavolo, because I feel like it's the ultimate waving the white flag question, is does the rest of the season for you, even though your future with this team is uncertain, is it a ramp up to next season, right? Like, from this point on, do you start trying to use this few games you have left in this season as basically just a way to get your roster and everything figured out with live actual baseball against real competitive teams that are in it, winning, trying to win something? You know, there's no other time that you're going to get, like, where you're at spring training, but the other teams are competing for the playoffs and going for the World Series. That's the situation that they're in. There's no winning and doing anything at this point.
I'm not going to lie. It felt good because a lot of my friends, close friends from college, are Dodger fans because they're from California and all that. And last night or yesterday in this whole series, my Dodger fan friends are rooting for the D-backs
to beat the Giants.
That makes sense.
And I'm not going to lie, it felt good that they didn't beat
them. Like, exactly.
Because now the Giants are up four games on the Dodgers. The Dodgers just got news that Clayton Kershaw isn't going to be back until September.
Uh-oh.
That's what Dave Roberts said yesterday. So good thing they got Max freaking Scherzer.
Oh,
anyway,
yeah, you know. Embarrassment of riches. That's the reason why you stockpile.
Trevor Bauer is really screwing them over right now. But the NL West is nuts.
It is.
The Padres, now Tatis is hurt, but
he'll be back mid-August, I think they
said. Dislocated that shoulder again.
Assuming that his shoulder heals magically like it always does.
Yeah. Again.
Don't know how
it's like
that.
The third time he's dislocated his shoulder.
I think he might be a lizard. I think he loses limbs and he just grows them back.
The crazy thing about these three teams is San Francisco is really the one that feels like they're playing with house money at this point, right?
Because
they weren't expected to be this good.
I still don't believe in them.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know why.
Right.
And like Gabe Kapler.
They're not that good, but he's a great manager.
Yeah, but he was terrible with the Phillies. His Phillies teams were awful. Awful.
Well,
and then he comes to San Francisco. I mean, they weren't that good. I think he was 2020 happened. So
sure,
but he manages really well. He's playing. He's managing this team that he's been given very well.
And
he's gotten great years out of guys like Kevin Gausman, who's all of a sudden come on the scene. Alex Wood,
right?
Anthony DeSclafani, even Johnny Cueto hasn't been horrible.
Right?
Johnny Cueto was not good at all.
Buster Posey's like an MVP again.
Well,
dude,
and
that
the players,
year he took off last year probably really helped.
The players that were killing the D-backs in this series weren't even household names. You know, that's the thing that's
Kurt
most impressive.
Casale, the backup catcher, owns the D-backs.
Solano,
Tyro Estrada,
right,
who I forgot was even in the league, is hitting like .340 for them.
That's
Lamont Wade.
So like,
who is that?
I think the difference here, Lamont Wade Jr.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The thing here is that's why it's so impressive as to what they're doing, right? Yeah, like they could eventually, like the Dodgers always do, because the Dodgers did that to the D-backs a few seasons ago, where the D-backs had a considerable lead in first place, and then
I know exactly what you're talking about. 2009, when they traded for Manny Ramirez, who was doing steroids.
Watch the Dodgers just cruise right past.
Sorry,
you. They've done it a couple of times.
Triggered.
More recently than that, actually. Oh,
he was actually doing estrogen.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
to cover up,
to mask the steroids.
Allegedly.
Can you see that? I was scarred by that.
Yeah, a little bit. But that maybe, and that could happen to the Giants, but the Giants feel like they didn't do as much as the Dodgers and the Padres have done to be in the winning position they have. So if they do drop down to a wild card position or something, I don't see it as being as much of a disappointment as it's going to be for both the Padres and the Dodgers if they don't win the NL West.
This is
going to
be fun because if the season ended today, the Dodgers would host the Padres in the wild card game.
Give me that. Give me that one game.
I don't like that.
I do.
I want a full series.
Yeah, that's kind of true, too.
That's true. But it would be very entertaining.
You guys know I hate the one game thing. I hate it because, first of all,
you play your
it's
whole
not
season for one game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First, I hate that.
162 games.
Secondarily to that is if you're a team like the D-backs were in 2017 where you only have one good starting pitcher, now you're going into the next series with nothing.
Right.
And honestly,
your best pitcher can't play until game three,
and
maybe
honestly,
four.
That's what the Padres have right now. Yu Darvish is probably their best pitcher, and he isn't.
Musgrove's pretty good.
Snell's been horrible.
Snell's terrible.
But meanwhile, the Dodgers would kill them or whoever in
if
the
I,
series.
If I was the Dodgers, if this happens, and if I was the Dodgers, if I have all my pitchers healthy by then, I'm throwing Max Scherzer in that wild card game.
Maybe
he's got that. He's got that attitude, man. He's going to shut you
but
down.
This is
for
why
one
I
game.
Want the Dodgers to make the playoffs outright.
Right.
I don't want them to play in a wild card game, and I don't even like the Dodgers, but I like good baseball.
Yeah.
And I want to see a Dodgers-Padres series.
Then are you in favor of the expanded playoffs or the wild card series? It's a best of three. Is that better?
Three's better than one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like the excitement of the one-game playoff.
I do
they're
too.
Exciting,
but
don't get me wrong.
I get why you don't like it.
They're good games.
And I get why it's not fair in a sense to these teams where, like Derek said, you play 162 games and then your entire year comes down to one game where anything can happen.
Yeah.
Where Trent Grisham, who is on the Milwaukee Brewers, doesn't field a ball correctly in right field and the Nationals walk it off. And the Nationals go on to win the World Series.
And then they go on to win the World Series.
It's funny we even have this discussion because football players would just be like, excuse me,
all of our playoffs are one game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but you guys
idiots.
Played 16 lousy games. Calm down. 16 games for it to come down to the playoffs.
You do your job for 16 hours a year.
Yeah.
So
yeah, let's chill.
What are we really talking about here? Josh Reddick getting DFA'd, good or bad?
It's not that he was bad for the team. I think it's a good move because now at this point, I mean, seriously, the D-backs are 34-76. They're 35 and a half games out of first place in the NL West. What is a 36, 37-year-old Josh Reddick really doing here? I get he could be a veteran voice in the locker room for the younger guys, but I want to see those younger guys play. And ever since Cole Calhoun has come back from, and he's another older guy, but I'm not saying they should get rid of Cole Calhoun, but ever since Calhoun has come back, Reddick hasn't really been playing at all. So, and Torrey even said in his postgame or pregame, I think pregame show on the radio side, that he told Josh that they want to see more of the younger guys and that this gives him a chance to be possibly claimed by another team that's maybe in a better position. He can get playing time maybe on a contender somewhere because he wasn't horrible with
not
the D-backs.
All.
He wasn't horrible at all. He was hitting.
He was a great teammate.
Yeah.
I think that was the thing that was really important. I think he brings a lot of that to the clubhouse. He shaved his head into a mohawk and dyed it red.
His hair was dyed blue the other day,
yeah.
I think I saw.
He does whatever to just have some fun
but
try to pop the guys and make them, you know, enjoy playing baseball. I think that's valuable because a lot of teams might be a little too, you know, a little too caught up in the playoff race and a little too tense in the clubhouse. I think he'd bring a lot. I also think, he wasn't hitting, he wasn't doing bad. He was hitting .258. But I think Bear's point is the best point. At this point, it should be the young guys getting playing time and using this as an opportunity to just get that initial, you know, that initial fear of being at the major league level out of you to where you're confident and you are comfortable being here. I know that's the biggest problem with young players coming up, and that's why we see that difference from like AA or AAA to when they get in the bigs, is a lot of guys are you know, kind of like deer in headlights when they first get here. It's a much different game.
So I'll ask you then, you need to get at-bats for Ketel Marte because he's missed a lot of the season.
Yes.
So you're not going to bench him just to play a younger guy. That doesn't make any sense. But could we see less of Cole Calhoun, David Peralta, Christian Walker?
Yes, because I think you need to get Pavin Smith and Dalton Varsho at-bats every day. And it's obviously Carson Kelly is your main catcher, so Dalton Varsho is probably going to play the majority of the time in the outfield. And it seems like what they're doing is Ketel Marte is playing every other day right now. So Dalton Varsho is going to get a lot of chances in center field, where he's actually not that terrible of a fielder.
Or Smith, now that he's back.
Yeah, and yesterday, Pavin Smith was in right field, and he let a ball drop in that he probably should have went for and caught.
On the flip side, he made a lot of hard contact yesterday.
He did. He drove in three of their four runs.
And also, I don't know if you could tell on the broadcast, but just sitting there behind home plate, like, he hit a lot of foul balls really, really hard, too. Yeah.
He sees a lot of pitches. He has great plate vision.
Yeah.
And he makes a lot of contact. He's going to be a really good hitter, I think. But to me, like, to answer your question, I think we're going to see less of Calhoun and less of Christian Walker. I don't know about David Peralta because he's still that, you know, that Energizer Bunny type of
didn't play guy. Yesterday.
Yeah, so anyway, but I think whether it's in right field, center field, first base, Pavin Smith needs to play every day. I think Dalton Varsho needs to play somewhere every day. And then when Josh Rojas comes back, Josh Rojas needs to play every day.
Josh Reddick, I give him a lot of credit for coming here and filling in the way that he did. At times, he was their best player on the field, and that was at a time where the D-backs literally just needed baseball players to fill in because
he was a temporary fix to a much more big scale issue they had with injuries.
Right. But what I really liked about guys like him and Stephen Vogt is the fact that they really were good teammates to these young guys. They gave them a lot of good advice, and it's not something that you can necessarily get if your team is completely comprised of rookies. He was a big fan of Pavin Smith, and I've talked about it before, but he loved watching his at bats, and he thought that Pavin Smith was one of the best hitters as far as like knowing the strike zone that we have on this team and that he's ever seen. He gave him a lot of credit. Plus, Reddick came out to pro wrestling theme songs.
That's why you like
it. And
so
you know
much.
That I'm a big fan of that, but he switched it up three times this season. So I just want to give him credit for not only using CM Punk's Cult of Personality by Living Color, but he also went with Ric Flair's Woo theme song, and lately he's been rocking the NWO Wolfpack Red and Black theme song. So.
Keeping your walk-up music fresh is an art form.
It really is.
It'd be an easy thing to forget about and just not handle. But
I will never forget what they did to this team by using their victory song as walk-up music, and I'm talking about you, Ketel Marte. He knew what he did was wrong, and
he changed tanked the
it.
Whole season.
It's all his fault.
Max Scherzer, solid debut with the Dodgers after getting traded with Trey Turner.
Of course.
How much worse does it make you feel about it knowing that the Diamondbacks basically gave up on Max Scherzer too soon?
I'll start here because
this was like a decade ago, by the way.
Go ahead.
It doesn't matter because I will.
Bear, you have the floor.
I will forever hate this. Because Max Scherzer, I was so excited for Max Scherzer in 2008, 2009 when he was, that's the only 2 years he pitched with the D-backs.
12 years ago.
The problem I have with this, and there's some arguments that people have tried to make for me, like, well, he wouldn't have stayed in Arizona and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
I'm like, well,
that's valid.
Well, they would have had years of control, first of all, on Max Scherzer.
Yeah, he would have been good while he was here.
Yes. So,
even if he left.
My biggest problem was, and it's been a problem in the past with this organization, they give up on guys way too fast. Max Scherzer, and I looked this up because I didn't actually know the numbers. Max Scherzer pitched in a total of 46 games for the Arizona Diamondbacks before they decided, he's not a part of our future. Ship him to Detroit for Ian Kennedy and Edwin Jackson.
How many starts?
30 starts.
37 starts for the Diamondbacks.
37 total starts.
Yeah,
you're right.
He
went 9-15 in 2 years.
Yep.
With a 3.86 ERA.
So that's about a full season of starts.
Sure.
Correct. And they decided, you're not any good. You're not going to be good for us. We don't think you're going to be that great.
I honestly don't remember because I wasn't a huge fan of the team in 2009. But
they were very bad during
that
time.
Did they honestly think he wasn't going to be that good, or did they just really like the return they were getting?
What I had read, and I could be wrong on this now because it was a while ago, was that their brain trust of evaluators and everybody pretty much projected him to be a closer or a really good relief pitcher.
Okay.
And that he wasn't going to be a great starter in this league. Still, even if you project that he's going to be a good closer, I feel like you'd still keep him.
The D-backs got back Ian Kennedy and Edwin Jackson.
Yes.
And it's also sent Curtis Granderson to the Yankees from Detroit.
Right.
That worked out really well for the Yankees. And to be fair, the Diamondbacks did make the playoffs with Ian Kennedy and Edwin Jackson in 2011.
Correct. Kennedy was a 20-game winner, one of very few in this franchise history.
A Cy Young Award candidate. But I would still trade years of Max Scherzer for that one playoff appearance.
Of course.
That's just me. Some people disagree with me on that. I've talked to them. Some people think, well, they would rather have Ian Kennedy in a playoff appearance than Max Scherzer.
They
think Max Scherzer wouldn't have been a Diamondback for very long.
But I would give up that playoff appearance to get Max Scherzer because I think that if you built around Max Scherzer and he had the same level of success that he went on to have with Detroit, then I think you do make the playoffs some of those other seasons.
On the other side of that, Max Scherzer didn't really start pitching really well until 2013. His next with Detroit, his first three seasons in Detroit, he had a 3.50 ERA, a 4.43, and a 3.74. And then in 2013, he went on six straight All-Star appearances through 2019.
Right. Is Max Scherzer a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Yes, he is.
Absolutely.
I think so.
Absolutely.
You don't think so, do you? That face.
I don't know. I haven't. No,
I
haven't looked into the numbers too much other than what you just read me, but I'd have to compare it to Hall of Fame.
Here's the most impressive stat of his time in Detroit. You ready for this?
Yes.
His time in Detroit, what did I say his ERA was with Arizona? 3.58?
Something like that, yeah.
His entire time with Detroit, his ERA is 3.52. Max Scherzer was Max Scherzer no matter where he played. The difference is...
Actually, his ERA in Arizona was 3.86.
3.86, okay.
So he was a little bit better in Detroit.
Yeah, sure. But like you said, he...
But not otherworldly. Yeah.
Not otherworldly.
Not like in Washington.
Right.
Yeah, not like...
2.8.
Like a 5 ERA and then a sub-2 ERA or nothing crazy like that. But his winning percentage with Detroit, 7.01. He went 82-35 in 161 starts with Detroit.
He was playing for a great team.
He's also fifth. Just you're asking if he's a Hall of Famer. He has won 184 games. That's a big staple in Hall of Fame numbers. He's on the cusp. He's 59 strikeouts away from 3,000
since leaving Arizona.
So that's pretty good.
He doesn't have a losing season since leaving Arizona. He was 12-11 the following season, 15-9, 16-7, 21-3, 18-5. Then with the Nationals, 14-12, 20-7.
He's also been on contenders, though.
Yes.
Yeah, that's valid. I mean, the Nationals...
Washington spent out the butt to to get their 2019 championship.
But he's been on Washington since 2015, so they built kind of around him. He was their big crown jewel for that team.
It was interesting how the Washington Nationals were able to win the championship the year after Bryce Harper left because they could spend all that money they were going to spend on him on actual role players.
Well,
that
and
were
you
good.
See how... good the Phillies are doing, by the way. All right. But yeah, no, the whole
I
thing...
I always pick on Bryce Harper. Sorry, Bryce.
You could talk a lot about Scherzer, but man, he is just a good pitcher. And
okay, there's...
Like you said, I don't think he would have been with the Diamondbacks long-term anyway had they kept him, right? So that's the bigger thing. He
would have at least been on the team for like 5 to 6 years.
Well, and he probably would have been good enough that it would have been a hard time for the Diamondbacks to let him go at that point. They might have given him that big contract to stay here instead of him going to Washington.
Scherzer, I just looked this up, by the way, has a career WAR of 63. 63 wins. On the list, that puts him 49th all time.
Wow.
He is above a couple of Hall of Famers. Dennis Eckersley, who for a lot of his career was a reliever.
Sure.
There's a couple other guys below him. Hal Newhouser had 60. But for the most part, he's at the bottom rung of the ladder of Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
Well, and
there's a lot of good Hall of Famers above him, but 63 is kind of the minimum. And let's assume he has how many years left in him? Three or four good years?
Maybe. I was going to say four.
Three or four good years?
Four.
Figuring that with the Dodgers will probably be the end. He'll probably... And his career with the Dodgers.
He's 37.
Yeah.
So I'd say
let's say two or three. two or three good seasons, maybe he gets up to like the 66 range. He could be a Hall of Famer. Zach Greinke is actually a lot higher. Zach Greinke's at 68.
Zach Greinke is also a Hall of Famer. I will say that he is going to be a sure Hall of Famer if he wins another World Series with a different team. I feel like that is a big...
That plays a role.
That's winning a big role. Winning championships and winning multiple championships with different franchises. A lot of times a franchise can be good for an extended period of time.
He went to the World Series with the Tigers, right? Did I make that up?
Yes.
Didn't win it, but went.
He was a part of the... Like, the Tigers had Verlander, Scherzer, and Price at the same time.
And Jordan Zimmermann.
And Anibal Sanchez.
Everybody.
Who at the time was really good, Anibal Sanchez.
Yeah, the guys who are, like, clearly ahead of him are Greinke, Clayton Kershaw, and Justin Verlander. Kershaw is the youngest by far, 33.
Yeah. I mean, he's only 33.
He's 33. Yep. We got a lot of... Verlander's 38. Like 7 more years of dealing with him.
I just thought of this since we're talking about the Dodgers. The other day, I wanted to see what you guys think about this. Joey Votto was on a podcast or Dan Patrick show, I can't remember. And he said he thinks it's time to move on from hating the Astros because the Dodgers were just playing the Astros in Dodger Stadium. And I don't know if you guys saw it, but
it was absurd.
Got pretty ugly.
It was absurd.
In the stands, too. And, you know, fans throwing trash cans on the field and inflatable trash cans, real trash cans. There was some violence in the stands between Astros fans and Dodger fans. And so Joey Votto basically said, okay, it's time to move on, basically. And my thought about that was like, I kind of get it. It's been how long since that happened. But for me, I'm still okay with booing them. I'm not okay with the violence in the stands and like people wearing Astros gear are getting assaulted and
that's not okay.
And there's fights and whatever. But I'm okay with still booing them and hating on them because for me, they cheated to win a World Series. And not saying that other teams haven't cheated. They got caught and there was no punishment dealt to their players. There was, AJ Hinch and Alex Cora got a year off from work. And they both have jobs again. Alex Cora is back with the Red Sox after 1 year.
The same team that fired
him.
And they're in
first place or around there. They're in second or first place. And AJ Hinch is with the Tigers, and the Tigers seem like they're kind of not upstart team, but they're
rebuilding.
They're rebuilding, and he could be a part of it. Carlos Beltran still hasn't found a job, by the way. But
he also didn't really have a solid job. He had just earned that
job, and then
they fired him before he even started.
Right. And so, I don't know. I want to know what you guys thought about, like, should we just move on from the Astros to one of the biggest cheating scandals in Major League Baseball?
I thought it was ridiculous seeing it, right? I saw people posting videos on social media a few hours before the first game, and there were people out there booing them during batting practice.
By the way, the biggest crowds in MLB this year were those games at Dodger Stadium. They were selling out their stadium, over 52,000 fans.
That's
in that
incredible.
Series.
I think that it's understandable, but it, you know, the Dodgers of all teams and all fan bases are the ones that are that should be the most angry. You know, they are the ones that felt like they got cheated out of a championship
twice. Technically, because I think the rumor or the report was that Alex Cora was doing the same stuff
with Boston
the next year in 2018.
Yeah. I think where I am at on this is I have moved on. I think that it's not really like when an Astros game pops up on TV, I'm not thinking about that.
Right.
You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
So like, I guess I've moved on. But I'm with Derek in that I don't feel like Dodger fans are going to move on for a long time.
No.
And I don't necessarily blame them for reasons that you laid out, Cody,
sure.
But I think that Dodger fans are going to hate them for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to see this happen, it's not a surprise.
And like you said, it's probably not going to end this season either.
No.
I just also think that it's all ridiculous, right? Most of the time you're booing players that weren't even on that team. They attack Josh Reddick when Josh Reddick comes up to bat here. I mean, it's definitely something that, like you said, is not going to be forgotten. I just, being an outsider that doesn't really care one way or another, I think it's lame. I think it's ridiculous. I can't believe you're wasting your energy on that. But this is sports. This is baseball. This is what it's all about. to this day, I still hate Robert Horry more than I hate any man living or breathing on this planet.
Yeah. What a cheater.
And I will never forget the things that he has done to my team. Multiple infractions.
The hip check.
Don't even bring up the hip check.
That's what I think of.
I think of the hip check every time.
I know.
That whole Spurs team.
Just stop. I was fine. I just was trying to say, like, I understand where they're coming from.
Parker breaks Steve Nash's nose. Bowen knees guys in the nether region.
Can you imagine if the Astros win the World Series season? What if the Astros win the World Series?
They are very good.
What if
they're good every year?
What if Altuve hits a walk-off home run to win the World Series? And he's crossing home plate, and he's holding his shirt real tight, like he did when he clearly cheated.
That was happening in their series in Yankee Stadium. In Houston, actually, the Yankees were in Houston. Aaron Judge hits a home run, and he rounds third base and does
holding his jersey.
Yeah, holding his jersey closed,
making fun of Altuve.
Yankees fans too have a reason to.
Can you imagine if they win the World Series? I know it's a different team than certainly 2017 was, but a lot of the core is still there. Bregman, Altuve, Correa, a lot of the same dudes.
Gurriel
is still there. The whole infield, really, now that I think of it.
Mm-hmm.
Brantley wasn't there yet. No, I don't think so.
No, Brantley wasn't there. I don't know if Kyle Tucker was up yet either.
Yeah. But
anyway.
My point is, there are times when it will get brought back up moving forward if the Astros have a certain level of success. They got to deal with that. They made their bed, now lie in it. But I'm not thinking about it now.
I think they were never gonna strip the championship from them. That just wasn't gonna happen.
No.
But the fact that their players, none of them were suspended or any, like the coaches who were the ringleaders, for lack of a better term, like Alex Cora and Carlos Beltran, they got a slap on the wrist. They got a year. AJ Hinch as well, because he apparently didn't do enough to stop it. Got a year off from work. But then Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, Alex Bregman, nothing happened to those guys because they basically ratted them out.
This is the punishment, Bear. This is it.
Booing? I'm sorry.
Well, you say booing.
Court of public opinion.
It's the hate. It's the hate. It's the scrutiny. It is the reputation
hit.
You're never going to get past it. I mean, look at Pete Rose.
You're right there. Yeah, you're right. Know? Every time everyone looks at and thinks of Jose Altuve, they're going to think of the buzzer, the buzzer possibly on his chest, and the cheating.
Well, like
Carlos Correa, he's probably going to leave in free agency somewhere else.
Well, my point being about Pete Rose was Pete Rose actually got punished, right? But the thing with
he's
still being punished to this day.
It's true.
For something that really baseball is getting all behind now lately.
The betting.
The gambling on
the
sport.
I think as soon as that becomes legal in every baseball city, Pete Rose should probably be allowed to
play. Please, because I'm tired of seeing him in a mall in Las Vegas every time I go there. I'm really tired
signing
of that.
Signing stuff.
Oh, it's so sad. But I think that's really what it comes down to. When you break the rules, the thing you really have to live with at the end of the day is the public scrutiny. You have to deal with all of that and, you know, your reputation taking a hit. Even if people hate you, if you're a good player, they can respect you and they can still like you in a way. Yeah, I hate what Brandon Belt does to the Diamondbacks, but I respect the hell out of him for the way that he does it every single time. He'll be batting under 200 and he'll still come in here and hit four home runs against the Diamondbacks at Chase Field. You just got to respect it sometimes and not hate the player. You can hate the game. This is one of those situations where you're hating the players and they might not have gotten, you know, the same punishment that people felt like they deserved. And maybe if they did get punished, it would help with this public scrutiny. Jose Altuve is no longer that adorable little player that everybody loves because he's small but he overcomes and has such a big heart. Yeah, now he's a villain.
He's no longer the Dustin Pedroia type where he's an example for people that think, oh, I can't be a professional athlete. I'm too short or whatever. Yeah. I'm too small. He's no longer that put on a pedestal in that way. He's now the cheater that cheated his way to a championship.
Meanwhile, he's still just killing it.
And making millions of dollars.
And making millions of dollars.
I'm going to attempt to wrap up the podcast. I know that usually doesn't go well.
You guys are
going
to interrupt. Let us find our point.
Yeah.
Let me get my final thoughts in.
Get your last thought in, Derek.
I'll give you Altuve's batting average in a second.
Fantastic. To recap, the Arizona Diamondbacks had the worst loss. We've anointed it as the worst loss of the season, and there have been many.
The 22-1 loss for the Dodgers, that was bad too.
It is decided.
It's the worst of the season until the next really bad one, which could come next week. Who knows? We thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I'm Steve Zinsmeister. That's Derek Montilla and Cody Fincher as well. For more baseball coverage and all things Arizona sports, check us out at ArizonaSports.com and on the Arizona Sports app.